The following audio is via a Skype call.
To infinity and beyond!
TGIF, it's Manson Mitchell with Gary Manson, Suzanne Mitchell. A double shot of good conversation with great guests to jumpstart your weekend. Manson Mitchell, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eric Kramer. TGIF indeed. Hi, everybody. I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
Together, we are Mance and Mitchell in your ears for the hour, if our luck holds up, of course. And if we stay on the good side of bad boy Benny Mathers at the board. Benny, how are you today?
Doing very well. My mother raised me also very well. So that means it's going to be a good show. And happy Mother's Day to you, too, leading up to the weekend.
Oh, very all nice right. to all you mothers out
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about that, and I don't want to deviate too much because we have a very highly esteemed guest, and I want to maximize our potential time with this gentleman, but I have noticed, I knew this over 20 years ago, doggone near 30 years ago, Seattle attracts many people who are either single and reinventing themselves, or the double income, no kids crowd, the dinks as they're called. And I don't think I've ever resided any place where there were so many people who opted out of parenthood.
I didn't know that either. However, I don't fall into that category. However, we're full if you're trying to move here, by the way.
Yes.
That's all
somebody
I'm gonna say.
Close the door and lock it.
Seriously, yeah. Double bolt that, chain it, do whatever you need to do. No one's leaving.
That's unbelievable. No, I think the rush hour in the afternoon starts about what, quarter after one,
yeah,
and goes until 10 p.m.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? If you want to come here and move here, I'd love to have you. Open arms.
Fantastic. Right. And they need there. That's a fantastic job market out there, especially for the highly trained, especially for those who are tech savvy and otherwise scientific, which brings me to the point of our hour today.
Well played, Gary. Well played. There you go. You get a ding. Very well.
Thank you.
Very excited about our guest today. And Gary, why don't you give the mad props?
I would love to do that. It'd be my privilege. Dr. Roger D. Nelson is director of the Institute of Noetic Sciences sponsored Global Consciousness Project, GCP for short, an international collaboration of scientists, artists, and citizens interested in the extraordinary aspects of human consciousness. He also coordinates research in the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research PEAR Laboratory at Princeton University. Dr. Nelson's professional training is in experimental psychology and psychophysiology, supplemented by a background in physics, statistical methods, engineering, sculpture, electronic music, and multimedia production. He is a student of so-called alternate psychologies, which represent a wide range of transpersonal and non-Western approaches to the understanding of consciousness. He feels that an inclusive and multidisciplinary approach, combining scientific, aesthetic, and spiritual perspectives, is essential if we are to come to terms with consciousness as it exists and operates in the physical world. And with that mouthful, we are only too happy to welcome Dr. Roger Nelson. Dr. Nelson, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Being out in the sun and poking at the weeds and pruning things, it's gardening time. In the east.
Oh, very much so.
That is great. You know, Suzanne took a good look at your picture when we were doing our prep work today, and she said, this Roger Nelson, I'm trying to figure out what he looks. He has this great beard on him. He has this rugged look, and I took a quick look, and I said, he looks like a guy who sailed around Tahiti in a raft.
Not yet, but it might be in my future. Although I might want a canoe.
Now
you go anywhere around Puget Sound, you know, that's we definitely can make room for that around the Seattle area, that's for sure. And what's interesting too, Dr. Nelson, or Roger, if I may be so bold, is that in your case, I really love it when scientists are able to engage at a very high level, Ivy League level even, and yet retain the sense of humanity. I don't see you with maybe at one time you were that guy, but it doesn't seem like any longer it would be the case where you have the pocket protector and going, well, what we have found in our studies by carrying the three is that it takes us to a quantum level of, you're able to translate some very abstruse concepts into everyday lives of people who have experiences, as you would expect from a global consciousness, and then translate that, your translation, for other people to appreciate. So thank you for that.
most welcome. I think it's actually essential to try to combine the various aspects of our experience, which include both kind of spiritual, mental aspects and the very mundane material aspects. If we don't combine those, we're not looking at the whole real world. And that's, I think, where we have to look if we want to understand something like consciousness.
Dr. Nelson, you have no idea how many times your name has come up on Manson Mitchell when we have talked with Stephen Schwartz, Barbara Marx Hubbard, the Global Consciousness Project, and we're always referencing you. And the last time you were on our show was many years ago, and I said to Gary, you know, we reference Dr. Nelson with these other guests. Let's get him on and have him explain to our listeners, rather than just in passing with somebody else. Well, I'd like to hear from you today for our listeners a little bit about the Global Consciousness Project. When did it start? Where did it start? And what's it all about? So if you could just encapsulate that a little bit, I think that'd be a great place to start the interview.
Okay, the Global Consciousness Project actually started after some fundamental work on the ability of individuals to influence physical systems, random number generators in particular, just by intention, by wishing or willing a random number generator to become less random. We thought we could capture some interaction or interconnection between human consciousness and the physical world. So we had experiments where people were sitting near a random number generator and given instructions to make the thing produce high numbers one time or low numbers another time, a kind of balanced protocol that ensures that biases don't confuse us. We actually also asked them to let the machine do baseline, let it do what it likes to do when nobody's watching. And anyway, those experiments showed that human intention could really it could have a small but ultimately highly significant effect on electronic random number sources. And having found that, we were also in the process of growing or miniaturizing, I guess one might properly say, the random number generators as electric. This is in the 1980s and 90s, long ago. So what we wanted to do is make smaller and smaller random number sources so that we could take them out into the field. And we did that ultimately in the early 90s and took these random number devices to places like fantastic concerts that really brought everybody into a kind of synchrony. Or we would take it to a cathedral where there was a ritual going on, something that's hundreds of years old and designed to bring people into a common frame of reference. So, common state of emotion, and other kinds of events. We looked for places that would bring a group of people into a kind of resonant state of consciousness, which we would call group consciousness. And the question was then, even without anybody knowing the machine was there, might this group consciousness, which we thought would form in, you know, the right circumstances, might that group consciousness also change the behavior of a random number generator? And the answer to that was also yes. Again, small effects, but very powerfully instructive and meaningful in terms of both science and a kind of personal experience. And as you may very well imagine, we started thinking, well, how big a group? And, of course, the biggest group we could imagine was the global, the entire world of people, or at least some significant portion of the entire globe, engaged by some event and brought into a kind of state of emotion that was shared by millions and millions of people. And you can imagine such events as great celebrations like New Year's, when a zillion people are lifting their glass at the same time, and that is an abstract moment, midnight, and trying to find their sweetheart so they can get a hug and a kiss just at midnight. So this is an event that brings people together in a pleasant way. And then there are also terrible tragedies, earthquakes and floods and terrorist attacks and so on, that also bring people into a common state of emotion, large numbers of people. So in the late 90s, starting in 1997, I gathered some resources and contacted friends and said, let's build a world EEG. Some of my friends are, you mentioned already, Stefan Schwartz and Dean Radin at IONS and various other scientists that I knew who were interested in these, you know, the extreme reaches of human consciousness. I got in touch with all of them, and together we built this a network which had ultimately something like 70 devices separately placed all around the world, hosted by people who could run a computer continuously and connect to the internet continuously, so that they could gather data from a random number generator attached to their computer, send the data to me in Princeton. So that was the beginning. In 1998, we took our first data, and it's been 20 years, a little bit more than 20 years now, and we're still collecting data from stations all around the world. And that's sort of a long story.
That was perfect. That was absolutely perfect. One of the things that I wanted to just drive home a little bit for anybody for whom this might be new information, you said the machines do what the machines do. And in this random number generator, it's a binary system of zeros and ones. And so it's a little bit like flipping a coin. If the numbers just come up randomly all on their own, it's either going to be a zero or a one. And in most cases, it would be a 50-50 split if you look at it over a period of time. You got 50 ones and you got 50 zeros. So my understanding about this is, when there is a global event, a New Year's Eve, a tsunami, a 9/11, something like that, all of a sudden it doesn't look like random zeros and ones. There's actually a pattern that develops, which indicates that there is something going on a global level, and the random number generators don't look so random anymore. They look like they're actually coming up with something that, what, looks like the other generators?
Right. Your description is really excellent. I think people probably can understand the basic point is that a random source like these random number generators we use is designed to do exactly what you say, a 50-50 production of zeros and ones with absolutely no predictability at all. These things are producing a sequence of numbers, and nobody, not even the machine itself, has any idea what the next number will be. So that's a setup for you might say that's the basic nature of a system that has the potential to be different from what it would have been if there's information available. And that's sort of a mouthful, but what I mean is that if somebody in the laboratory has an intention that it should produce more ones, that's information that might possibly be absorbed into a system that otherwise has no idea what to do next. Its future is labile. Its future is unpredicted and unpredictable, and so it could change from what it might have been. And what we found in the laboratory is it did change a very little bit, and in the Global Consciousness Project, it does produce a rather remarkable pattern. may be strongly put. What happens is that these devices, which are designed to be independent from each other and to produce random numbers no matter what, these devices, even though they're separated by thousands of kilometers in most cases, become slightly correlated with each other. It's remarkable. In the event where huge numbers of people are, you might say, correlated with each other, synchronized by a 9/11 or a New Year's celebration, during such a time, our random number generators become slightly correlated with each other, even though they're separated by global distances. This is quite remarkable. But that's the pattern that we see. That's the structure that mass consciousness, global consciousness, is able to induce in our otherwise random system.
And now tell me if I've got this correct. When, at the beginnings of this, the pre-global consciousness project was a matter of an individual person attempting to influence a random number generator by their thought, and then it evolved into 70 or more devices placed around the world that show a collective thought. So it went from like an individual consciousness to more of a collective consciousness. Do I have that right?
That's the best interpretation I know for the data that we have. Yep.
I'm very curious about the fact that this seems to be emotionally based. You're talking about a very scientific protocol, a scientific research project of devices that are putting out ones and zeros all the time, but seemed to be influenced by emotions. You couldn't have targeted that exactly, could you have? You couldn't say we're going to develop an emotional research. Were you surprised that that's what happened?
Well, not entirely surprised, because, you know, these big events are characterized by powerful emotions in most cases. I guess the example I gave of New Year's isn't exactly a powerful emotion, but it is. It does contain something like love and a kind of shared experience that, not strongly, but at least is somewhat emotional. In nature, when there's a terrible tragedy, of course, there's a tremendous amount of powerful emotions that are shared by people all over. So what we really were looking for in defining and, you might say, identifying events that we thought might have some effect, we were looking for things that would produce a shared consciousness, a shared thought, but why not shared emotions? And in fact, it turns out that most of the events that we think might possibly bring a global consciousness together, you know, create an operating, functional global consciousness, that those events are pretty emotional at their base. And that at some point, after we had collected a lot of individual experiments, each event was, you know, it was specified, or each event became a kind of a specific hypothesis which would test the general notion that global consciousness could change the way these our network operated. I'm not saying this very well. What I want to say is that we were looking for events that would potentially bring a large number of people into a resonant or coherent state, and the emotions do that very powerfully. If you think about, you know, the personal level, if you meet somebody new, and this person and you mesh, you become resonant, you fall in love, this is a very powerful kind of emotion, and it really changes the situation where you had two independent individuals who now have, in a sense, created a third. giving up a little individuality, at which isn't much of a cost. The two people can, you know, become a powerful new entity in the world, a couple feeling or sharing love. And the same kind of thing happens within groups. I just read this morning a beautiful little essay about singing in a church setting where everybody really gets into it. And this person was a white person who had joined a black congregation, and they were, and they accepted her after a while, partly because she felt so integrated into the group by the singing itself. So what happens then is that a new group consciousness is created. And 9/11 generated fear, generated huge amounts of compassion, and generated other kinds of emotions as well. And, I think the power of those emotions is what drives the correlation between the devices we have scattered around the world.
Dr. Roger Nelson is our guest. We're talking about the Global Consciousness Project. Actually, in a larger sense, we're talking about consciousness, shared consciousness. It's an endlessly fascinating topic. There are examples, and I'm thinking of one in particular that was not measured, and I only can speculate, and we'll do so with the help of Dr. Nelson, about what the effect might have been and how it fits into the concept of global consciousness, such as can be measured worldwide. More of Global Consciousness, more of Manson Mitchell in our particular way when we come back from a short break. Stick with us. You're listening to Seattle's home of alternative talk, AM 1150.
Preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Hello, my name is Marie Manucherry. I'm an energy intuitive author and host of Where Energy and Medicine Meet. During the show, I answer callers' questions, intuitively, of course, and provide invaluable guidance. I also interview others who I believe are on the leading edge of thought. Tune in on Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on 1150 a.m. in Seattle, or live wherever you are at energyintuitive.com.
This is my new best friend, Esther. She might look like any normal, playful puppy, but Esther's being raised to become a canine companion for independence assistance dog for a person with a disability. To get there, she needs lots of loving care and attention, plenty of exercise, and good eating habits so that she can live a long and healthy life for her future family. And she needs to spend tons of time socializing, learning basic commands like sit and stay, and taken to fun places with lots of distractions so that she can learn to cope in every situation. All of this will prepare Esther for more professional training to become a real assistance dog and a life helping a person with a disability to live more independently. Are you ready to open your heart and home for 18 months to a puppy like Esther? To find out more about becoming a canine companion for Independence Puppy Raiser or about other volunteer opportunities, visit cci.org or call 1-800-572-BARK. Raise a puppy, change a life. You can make a world of difference in the life of a person with a disability.
Hi, this is Susan Harmon, inviting you to join me every Friday, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time, for the Susan Harmon Hour. I'm always curious and I enjoy discussing a wide array of interesting and provocative subjects with fascinating and erudite guests. If you're looking for grounded authenticity with a twist, you'll want to join us for a fast-moving and informative hour right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Alternative Talk 1150, here to uplift your day.
Rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe.
welcome back to Manson Mitchell. Thank you, John Winston Lennon. And John Lennon factors into what I'm about to say. Our guest is Dr. Roger D. Nelson of Princeton and the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Very, very high caliber scientist, trained as an experimental psychologist with much else in his background, sufficient to make him at the forefront of consciousness studies. And consciousness, to use one term, is the substance of our hour today. Dr. Nelson, I wanted to, we just played a bump Across the Universe, written by John Lennon, a Beatles tune.
I wish I'd had the Global Consciousness Project running when those guys were on there, on top.
Oh, when they played Sullivan.
Yeah.
That's exactly awesome. Where I'm speculating, Dr. Nelson, but this
they
is where
really
I'm going.
People together.
They did worldwide and in place. And this was all before cable, before they actually were present when the global satellite went up and they performed in celebration of this technological feat. That's how much of an impact they had on the world. And I'm thinking of December 1980. Now, you didn't have your project up and running. The equipment wasn't in place. We understand that. But can you speculate, because there's a line to be drawn through that to another momentous event. The night that John Lennon was murdered, this would be the type of event that would have caused a major reaction in the system you employ had it been in existence at that time. It seems like the very kind of thing with all the global shock and grief and anger that would have shown up in a way that was measurable.
Well, it's easy to speculate because we've done some things that are a little bit like that. We would have seen a pretty powerful reaction in the global network because there was a powerful reaction shared by huge numbers of people around the globe. Now, something fairly close in a way, not a murder, but a very tragic death was when Michael Jackson died. We have had a number of other events where world famous people died or in the case of some were appointed to their high position, like the Pope. And those even though it's just one person, they're so meaningful. Their presence on the planet is so meaningful to so many people that they seem to have an outsized effect. And so I would predict, we would have had a notable reaction in the data when John Lennon was killed.
And nearly 20 years later, then, the line that I'm drawing through these two otherwise disparate events involving someone from the United Kingdom who passed away tragically. Now, this you have the data for, and that's the tragic death of Princess Diana.
Right. That was actually one of the early prototypes that led me to believe that it made sense and it was possible to set up a permanent network to see what happens to random number generators during events like that. We actually looked at the funeral ceremonies. I asked all the friends who were doing that kind of research to collect data during that day and send it to me. And I put together I combined them all statistically so that we were able to see what the effect on all of these widely dispersed machines was. And it turned out to be 101 odd deviation from chance expectations. So it was a very clear confirmation that I guess that's what you call proof of principle. It would make sense to try to do measurements like this.
And with that being the case, and these are terms that you're a lot more familiar with as a practical matter than someone like myself, but I keep hearing the term observation bias. One of the critics of the Global Consciousness Project, while stating his case politely, said, if you look at a pattern of numbers, something that registered and can be counted, it is possible and indeed quite likely that you will read patterns of events to mean what you want or hope or expect that they will mean. And I guess that's as good a description as I can come up with for observation bias, which would tend to argue against the idea that you are defeating laws of probability and chance in your measurements.
Well, excuse me, there are at least a couple of things that might be meant by that criticism. One of them is that we really fabulous pattern recognizers. So if we allow ourselves the freedom to look for unusual things in the data that are sort of close to the time of an event and so forth, we'll find something because random data have non-random looking bits here and there for no particularly good reason. Make sure that that's not what's going on, we have a very well-defined protocol where everything is specified about the test that we're going to make before the data are pulled out of the archive. So we set exactly the beginning and the end of the period of time where we're going to pull data, and then we take our lumps. If the data show a strong deviation like we predict, then we say that's evidence that helps to confirm the hypothesis. But quite frequently, about one-third of the time, it goes not in the direction we predict, but backward from that. And so that counts against our hypothesis. But even though the effect might not show up in every trial, if it shows up in way more than half of them, then it gradually builds up to a strong, convincing case that there is some there, to quote Gertrude Stein. But the other possible interpretation of that criticism is something along the lines of, I think it might be related to what people refer to as an experimenter effect, where the changes in the data are associated with the experimenter choosing to start the experimenter at just the right time so that truly random and purely unaffected data will happen to, by chance, produce the kind of deviation that is hoped for in the experiment. This would require something like a precognition of the future in order to press the button at the right time. And it doesn't fit the global consciousness project data very well because many of the events are there's no flexibility at all. Like New Year's, it's New Year's every year, and the specification for the amount, the particular clump of data we look at is specified, it has been the same for all these years. So it isn't a matter of deciding to push a button at just the right time. It can't be. And quite a few other kinds of things.
Dr. Nelson, yes. I understand what you're saying when you let everybody know, let the 70 places around the world know that you would like to measure New Year's or you would like to measure the consciousness around a new pope or a memorial service. I understand that in those situations, you're actually anticipating them. But what intrigued me so greatly about the Global Consciousness Project, what got me really kind of tuned into it, was the fact that there was this spiking in the random number generator starting around 5 a.m. the morning of 9/11. Now, there was no way to anticipate that.
Right.
So then you just watch those numbers climb, or they were climbing when nobody understood why at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the morning until the first plane hit the building.
And how would they know that in advance?
Right. Well, nobody knows anything about the data until after they've been pulled out of the archive and analyzed. They are just, by the way, recorded continuously. No, I don't have to let anybody know they should turn on the machine. They are on all the time. So we just have a continuous sequence of numbers from all those individual devices. So your question is basically how could that be explained? It isn't very likely it would be this precursor effect. It isn't very likely it could be explained by an experimenter effect because there was, you know, nothing happening. Nobody knew anything, although there were people around the world who said, I had a bad dream.
Right, but right.
What I think probably explains that is that the global consciousness, if there is such a thing, is kind of like a human consciousness, an individual. Many, many people report veridical precognition of something that might, you know, they sometimes people have a dream or just a feeling about something coming up very soon. If they pay attention, they discover that indeed there was or is an event to confirm the precognitive feeling they had. Lots of people save themselves from trouble, and at least report that by a dream or another kind of precognition that they need to be careful around driving around a certain corner.
Well, you're speaking very clearly to the audience that we have here on KKNW Alternative Talk, and that is that our listenership and our demographic is very open to intuition and to looking at things metaphysically, not just physically. And so one of the things that excited me so much, especially about having you on, is that we have heard, especially from people like psychic mediums, that our consciousness is non-local, and we get anecdotal information, and we get people's opinions about it. But I like the fact that you're approaching it from a very scientific and physical realm and kind of going to the same place. And this is what we hear about when they talk about quantum physics and metaphysics kind of heading in the same direction, like they're getting ready to meet, and they have already in several places. And so, you know, we wanted to bring on an esteemed person like yourself who is involved in more of a hardcore scientific approach, because you're really confirming what we have heard from others who don't have that scientific background but have that intuition. This is how I feel about it. This is how I see it. And so it's nice to be able to kind of add that touch of a confirmation and authenticity to things that we've been hearing about for years. So I appreciate you doing that.
I can add a little more information. One of my colleagues, Peter Van Zyl from Paris, years ago did an analysis of all the major earthquakes that with magnitude 6 or greater, and they're the ones that cause damage, often death, if they happen on land in cities. What he did was to collect all the timing information for all the big earthquakes, and he found 600 of them, and about 100 were on land where they could do damage and cause harm to people. And what he found in a bunch of exploratory analysis was a rather striking pattern showing that for about two-thirds of those earthquakes, there was a V-shaped pattern in the data where about 8 hours before the earthquake actually struck the main temblor, about 8 hours before, the data started in a downward path and reached a peak of negativity right at the time of the earthquake, and then started rebounding. So if you can just envision a graph drawn kind of random walk, level random walk for a while, and then at a certain point it starts downward, bottoms out, comes back up, and producing a kind of V-shape. That surrounds the main temblor of the earthquake, starting about something on the order of 8 hours before the quake actually happens. It almost looked like our network could become part of a earthquake prediction network. We've never pursued that. In fact, Peter doesn't really think the evidence is all that great. But it's a remarkable thing that out of a very large sample of earthquakes, this pattern should occur.
Well,
other cases too, but mostly...
Right, but it might be that human consciousness is not as tuned in, but but those are the times, like the hours preceding an earthquake or a tsunami, when the animals start moving, when the elephants are running up the mountain.
Let's get to that on the other side of
we
a
need
break.
To take a break.
You read my mind. That's another subject of study there, because I definitely want to bring that up in particular. It has implications I would love to explore with none other than Dr. Roger D. Nelson on the other side of a break. Last break of the hour, we'll be gone a couple of minutes, then more of this consciousness stuff, endlessly intriguing, endlessly fascinating, on Manson Mitchell, right here at Seattle's home of alternative talk, AM 1150.
Preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to manceandmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Mance and Mitchell show page at facebook.com/manceandmitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m. or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
Our military service members volunteer to protect us in the most dangerous places around the world. They step up. And when they are severely ill or injured, returning to their families is only the beginning of their long road home. Beyond all the hospitals and doctors and surgeries they need just to survive, they also deserve whatever they need to truly live. All the in-home care and day-to-day help they need to live independently, on their own terms. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs were established to provide these brave men and women whatever they need to continue their fight for independence at no cost for life. So many of them need us, and it's time for a grateful nation to step up. Find out how you can do your part at findwwp.org.
I'm Gary Mance.
And I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
Fridays and Saturdays at 10 a.m., Mance and Mitchell get up close and personal with authors, experts, and celebrities, discussing everything from pop culture to the paranormal with a dash of politics on the side.
We also share spiritual insights from around the world in ways that shine a light on issues that matter most to you.
Light up your life with a little help from your friends.
Bringing you fascinating talk since 2007, we are Mance and Mitchell, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Find out the latest about your favorite shows on Alternative Talk 1150. Check out 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back to Mance and Mitchell and our very special guest this hour, Dr. Roger D. Nelson. Dr. Nelson, if people would like to connect with you, I know that you're involved in more than one thing, and so you may have more than one website. And so please let our listeners know if they want to hear more about the Global Consciousness Project or Noetics or anything else that you're involved in, please let them know how they can be in touch with the things that you're in touch with.
The Global Consciousness Project primary website is global-mind.org. Global as in G-L-O-B-A-L dash M-I-N-D.org. You can also get there by going to noosphere.princeton.edu. And if people want to contact me, they can send an email to rdnelson@princeton.edu. I am connected with a variety of organizations, and I'll be going to two conferences this summer. I'm not doing a presentation at either of them, but I'm wide open to having a nice conversation in the hallway, as they say. One of them is the Society for Scientific Exploration, and that conference is in Las Vegas. And it's in June. I don't want to say the dates exactly, but people can look it up. Just look for Society for Scientific Exploration. Their website will have contact information and information about the conference. Then there's one later in, I guess this is August, in Petaluma, California, at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Their wonderful facilities for conferences up on the hill. And that's in, again, I don't want to do the dates exactly. It's August, and it's the Parapsychological Association. And you could probably find information by looking up Parapsychological Association or Institute of Noetic Sciences. Either of those places will have information about that conference. Couple of other things coming up, but nothing where I'm doing a presentation that's in this.
Excellent. Country. Okay, good. Well, thank you for that. Global-mind.org is probably the easiest and fastest way to get to you, or your email, rdnelson@princeton.edu. So a couple good ways for people to connect.
I should mention that the global-mind.org is a professional website, which is huge. So what people should do is look at the menu. There's a link to menu, and start looking down through the various items on, and there are four columns of items, and including a bunch of TV and YouTube videos and that kind of thing, interviews of various kinds. And in one column, and in another column, there'll be access to the data. If you like processing some, you can. And there are introductory notes here and there and so forth. Anyway, look at the menu, think about what you want, and the menu will help you find it.
That's excellent, and we will do so. Dr. Nelson, I did want to ask you, one of the momentous events of the last 20 years was the earthquake and the giant tsunami around, a lot of the world, actually, Sri Lanka and then Phuket, Thailand, and the environs. It was so strange what people observed in a number of ways, one of which was that animals, and we're talking about different species of animals, took to high ground while human beings were standing around going, oh, look at that octopus. Let's go out there and pick that up. There, the waters receded. How interesting, not knowing in our human minds what was about to happen. But the animals seemed to know, and they were escaping to higher ground. It just raises this question for me about the nature of consciousness, but in particular, when you're talking about different species, some more aware than others, what does it say about the non-locality of consciousness or that universality of mind that it can show up in such a startling way across species?
I think you've already outlined it well. The evidence is pretty clear that human beings aren't paying attention at some fundamental level of deep unconsciousness, even though we have, in principle, the same capacities as other mammals and other animals have of contacting or living in a non-local universe. We're pretty abstracted, and we're busy doing some other kinds of things that aren't in the non-local world of reality, but instead are pretty much stuck in the material world. At least that's my best immediate interpretation of what happened. A lot of people were killed from the tsunami, but there are no dead animals found on the beaches in Thailand and Sri Lanka, places that were hit by the tsunami.
That's astounding.
Yes. Yeah. And that really leads me to the next question, probably going to wrap up this hour. When we spoke with futurist Barbara Marx Hubbard, she said that humanity is really at a crossroads. And one direction is going to evolve us consciously in a way that's really going to serve humanity and carry us into a brighter future. And if we don't go that way, we could be looking at the end of humanity. And I just wanted to get your take on what you think is happening with the evolution of consciousness, specifically in human beings. I think the animals have it all over us if they could get to high ground. But how do you think humans are doing at this point?
Well, if you watch the news, you can be pretty pessimistic about how humans are doing at this time, at least in this country. But I think evidence from things like the Global Consciousness Project and lots of other, experiments in the field of consciousness, we're connected to the world in ways that we don't understand, and we're only beginning to see evidence for in scientific experiments. We're interconnected. We're connected with each other, but it's not something we know about directly. At least at this point, we are not. We've evolved in the wrong direction to be able to pay attention to what's going on at subconscious and unconscious levels. But the evidence shows that we are all connected. We're interconnected in such a way that we've become the fundamental substructure, understructure for a global consciousness. And we can see signs of that on occasion. I think seeing signs of it points to the fact that it exists. There is something like an interconnected consciousness that's always there. Mostly we don't see it because we haven't trained ourselves. We haven't learned to pay attention. So I think, in a sense, what the evidence from my work is pointing toward is the same ideas that Barbara Marx Hubbard is talking about and other people. That we are creative in consciousness terms. We are connected in deep layers of consciousness. And those point toward the possibility of deliberate, conscious evolution. We can become closer. We can gradually approach the potential we have. In other words, we can aim ourselves toward a bright future.
And the great news there is that evolution, though I guess there are people who look at it otherwise, it seems strange to me, but evolution is not a final package. It's not a done deal. Otherwise, how could it be evolution?
No, as a matter of fact, one of the inspirations for the Global Consciousness Project was Teilhard de Chardin's description of the human beings as the kind of quasi-pinnacle of evolution. He said, we imagine that we've done the job, that we are at the apex. But he said, that's not quite correct. There is another stage. We must become, and we will evolve into a sheath of intelligence for the Earth. And that is, he called the noosphere. We are, I think, on our way to that, partly through media communications, the material connections, but also through our interconnections, which are based on things like compassion and love.
Thank you, Dr. Nelson.
Thank you so much.
We will have you back, sir, with your good graces. We'll put you in touch with Stefan Schwartz. We'll have us a party. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Nelson.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Coming up next,
Christine Upchurch, followed by Susan Harmon. And join us again tomorrow.
10 a.m. right here, 10 a.m. Pacific on AM 1150 or streaming 1150kknw.com. Have a great weekend and a great Mother's Day, everyone.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.